You can find more information, photos, and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes we talk about on this podcast by heading to the show notes or at sarahraven.com/podcast. Welcome to Grow, Cook, Eat, Arrange, the podcast of me, Sarah Raven, and today I've got a really exciting guest, Molly Mahn, who lots of you will know. She is famous for her block printing fabrics and designs, and I wanted Molly to come on, partly because she lives quite near me in Sussex, but also actually there are various people who I admire, women who have set up businesses and run with it in a way, I suppose, like me. And I love them for that. And I'm interested to hear about their background. So hello, Molly. It's really lovely that you've joined me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled.
Good. Well, I would love to hear, we would all love to hear a little bit or a lot, whatever you want, about how you came to do what you do. Did you go to art school? You know, all the kind of as much background as you can possibly bear to tell us.
Well, I'll dive in with saying, no, I didn't. I didn't go to art school. I actually didn't even do art GCSE at school. I was sort of sent in a slightly more academic route. And I look back now, I remember at the time feeling sort of mortified that I wasn't doing something creative. But I look back now and I wonder if that was actually how I've ended up here doing this now, because I think I always yearned for creativity and being creative. And so A-levels or GCSEs aside, and spending a lot of my time at university in my friends' art departments, I had to sort of forge my own way creatively. And I think I also, by that point, after school, figured I'd finished all my sort of educational side of things, and that actually it would just be a hobby and it would just be something I did at weekends or in my own time. I've got a very creative family. My grandmother was an artist. My mother is a very successful artist. And growing up, I grew up sort of torn between my dad being in the garden and my mum doing creative things at the kitchen table, be it marbling or bookbinding or painting, all those things. So I had a very creative surrounding, I suppose. And therefore, I sort of breathed it in my own life as well. And it wasn't, I mean, life ran away with me in my 20s, I suppose, and I was thinking careers and fun and life and boyfriends and all that sort of thing. And it wasn't until I was married and I had my first daughter, Lani, so this is now about 16 years ago, that I found myself at home and spending a lot more time at the kitchen table. And I'm not a great baker or a great sort of cooker, and I needed something to sort of spend my time being busy with. I love being busy. I had a very busy career before I got into this.
Can I interrupt and ask you what that was?
Yes, I had an events company, so I organised events, and we did sort of weddings and corporate events. I lived in London. I ran it with another girl. We would hire amazing venues in London, and actually the bit I always loved the most was organising the flowers. And working with the table centres. And I suppose if I look back, I was being creative, but in a different format. And so once I had Lani, events was not the best sort of career to combine with children. So I stopped doing that. And yeah, I found myself at the kitchen table. I just needed to be busy. And so I started to do different things, from drawing to illustration. And nothing really, really sort of made me feel terribly excited until I took myself on a block printing workshop with a lady called Angel, who lived in Barnes. I was living in London in Barnes at this time. And I went on her course, and I don't know what it is, and I'm still trying to work it out now, but there was something about block printing that just caught my attention, gave me this extraordinary kind of energy and feeling of, yes, this is what I love and this is what I want to do. You probably had that when you first kind of came into your gardening era. I don't know why or what it is about us. We all have our different things.
But I mean, it is interesting. I mean, this isn't about me, it's about you, but it is interesting that my background in a way is rather similar, which is that I followed a completely different path to horticulture, was a medic, in fact. And you know, and then children did not combine well with medicine. And so I found I took up my hobby as gradually became my business. But again, like you had absolutely no training whatsoever.
Yes.
Anyway, so back to block printing. So it just, it made you feel joyful. And I think that's...
It made me feel joyful. And it just made me, I just wanted to do it again. You know, the first moment I lifted the wooden block off the cloth, I had some extraordinary lovely feeling inside. I guess it sets off some kind of hormone or something, you know, that makes you feel great. And so one wants more of that. And so I set about it very much as a sort of passion project. I never at this point thought it would be a business. I just did it for my own enjoyment. And I suppose after a while, and the bits of paper I were printing were stacking up, I felt the need to kind of justify that continuation. And I'm also a real stationery addict. I love stationery. I've collected bits of stationery all my life, lovely box files and things like that. So I found a guy to start making stationery with my printed paper. I had those boxes that you could get from Venice and things like that. So I guess they were sort of my inspiration. And he started to make bits of stationery. I then took them to little fairs just to sell. Again, it was a sort of means of justifying that lovely hobby. And it has just organically grown from there. And the story kind of goes on and on. I had lovely customers who bought my things and commissioned me to make some more. I definitely have my girlfriends to thank. They're always really encouraging. And one girlfriend in particular thought that one of my papers could work really well as a wallpaper in her shepherd's hut. She has a farm actually just down the road from you. And she said, come on, Moll, you can print some wallpaper. So I did just buy lining paper from Homebase and hung it in my garage at home and printed roll upon roll of wallpaper. And they put that up in one of their shepherd's hut that they were renting. And actually, it's my one of my designs. It's called Birds and Bees. And it's very nature-inspired. And there are lots of little insects in it and blackbird and things like that. And so people who stayed in the hut said, oh, I love this wallpaper. Where can I get some? And so it began.
That's so brilliant. And one of the places that I really feel is a kind of extraordinarily exciting place to go is Bagru outside Jaipur.
Yeah.
And I think you went there, didn't you? And then started having your designs made there. Will you tell us a bit about the whole process of, you know, and the indigo pits and that extraordinary yard that goes on and on and on? I just remember opening a door into that yard with the people doing their mud block prints.
Yes.
Anyway, I'd love you to tell us about that.
Yes, of course. Yes, because that has totally changed, again, my business, but also my life. I wanted to learn more about block printing. You know, as I said, I wasn't educated in it and I was very much in my garage by myself or at my kitchen table by myself, sort of creating these blocks in lino and experimenting and I looked back at some of the British block printers, Baron and Larcher and Enid Marks and things like that as well. But I really was fascinated when I started to look into the block printing that was being done in India. And eventually I found it all just too much. I needed to go. I deserted. By then I had three children. I deserted my three children. One was quite young. And I just went. I think maybe it might have been a result of having three children. I needed a little bit of me time as well. So it all felt like a very good excuse just to go by myself. And I did. I did a lot of research before I went. But I went to an area called Bagru, as you say, in Rajasthan, just outside of Jaipur. And it's this extraordinary, exquisite little village where they really, time has not moved on in terms of craft. So they're called cheapers and they are the block printers. And it's a skill that's been handed down from generation to generation. And I met a very nice man called Vijendra there. And I wanted just to learn from him, I suppose. And you can do workshops there as well. But actually, we forged a really great relationship. And he was like, but we could do some printing for you. It had never crossed my mind that I would actually have something printed in India, which seems extraordinary on reflection, but I was very much, you know, about me doing it myself. But we did thought, well, we'd have a little play. And it is an extraordinary place. And it's so worth a visit because there's so much there. It's like a sort of craft museum. As you say, there are the extraordinary indigo vats and they're still using proper indigo, not the chemical one, but the real deal. Yeah. And the vats are down in the ground. And what I love about it, it's a community work. They're all sort of related. There are lots of families that live around and they all do their own little bit. So one family does the indigo dyeing. Another family do, as you say, the mud printing, the dabu printing. And actually that I love because for some reason, women do the dabu printing, whereas generally men, it's men that do all these crafts. But for some strange reason, the women do the dabu printing up on the roofs of their houses with the mud. And it's very jolly and joyful. They chatter away and have a wonderful time while they're doing it. And anyway, everybody works together and another family will do the sewing. And in the middle of this, as you say, is this huge sort of drying area. And it's like a kaleidoscope, a quilted of quilts, because the fabrics are being changed all the time. So it might be all blue and you walk out and it's this sort of sea of blue indigo cloth. And then they pick that up and wrap it up into balls and stick it on their motorbikes and drive it off to the markets. And then it might be madder or something that's turmeric coloured. And they still use a lot of natural dyes, which is absolutely brilliant. It was a real learning curve. It was just so electric and exciting. And I couldn't get enough of it. I feel very kind of connected now to the work that I do in Jaipur. I find India very, very hopeful. They're incredibly positive people. They love their craft. It's a huge part of the economy, actually, in Jaipur, craft. And it's also visible, whereas in the UK, we're all in our workshops hidden away. It's quite hard to access, whereas in India, it was all there. And I met a lot of people who love talking about block printing as well.
I remember when I went, I loved the thing, which just as you say, it's like a sort of living museum. I mean, there's a similar place in a funny way with plants called Hortus Bulborum in Holland, where it's a living tulip or spring bulb museum. So everything is actually there. It's not a photograph or drawing or a painting. It's the bulb, and they've stored them for centuries now. And what I felt about Bagru was you sort of arrive and on a tour you get shown the guy who's carving the block print, and then there's a guy who does the sort of wax finer carving of the block print, and then you go through and you see them making all the pigments and stuff, and then you go through and you see the ladies doing the dabbing with it, and then you go through and you go see it going, and it's just like it's so vivid and you can see every step. And it then, when you look at fabric, it makes me look at fabric in a different way. When I was buying fabric there, but even back here, I can see how they've dyed it and then stenciled or block printed it or whatever, and then they've dyed it again. And you can see the layers of the different pigment that goes through a fabric. And you can also see why something's quite expensive or cheap, you know, because it's involved so many more processes.
And I think it's the process that makes it so exciting. I think that's what I love about it. It's not one thing. It's from that seed of an idea when I'm thinking about my design to sketching it to having the block carved. It's the, you know, it's the whole process, and it takes a whole team as well. And it's the same with gardening, isn't it? You have to be quite patient as well from when you sort of first think about what you're wanting to plant to putting it in the ground and hoping it works. It's a bit like me now when I'm doing a design in my head, and then I've got to see it through to the and wait patiently until we see it on the cloth and whether it's going to work or not. It's that whole long process, which I think is very good for us in the modern day as well, to be patient and take our time. I've actually just launched a new fabric collection, and that's taken me about 2 to 3 years from when I first thought of it to actually sort of putting it out there in the world. So it's a lengthy thing.
Yes. And so tell us a little bit about Molly Marr now, you know, the sort of studio and kind of how you do the process from your sketchbook to it being in Liberty or wherever, you know, or selling from your website. Will you just explain how that process happens? Because I'm fascinated in that.
Yes, I think my designs always start in my head. And I see them or I think them. I'm not quite sure how, you know, I know our brains all work so differently. I think I probably see them. And it can be, I mean, my very original fabric collection, I literally would go and pick a leaf from the forest. I live in the Ashdown Forest and draw around it. And that would be the beginning of the design. And then it's about playing with the placement and the scale and the colours that you print in as well affect a design. And so I get these ideas in my head. And then, yes, I race back to my studio where I'm sitting now in the garden. And I start to do simple sketches. And when I started, I would have then gone on to carve the block in lino. And I still do that a bit, but more of a practice thing. We actually now have a studio in Delhi that prints all my fabrics. We're selling our fabrics on a much bigger scale globally as well. So there's no way I could manage that kind of quantity. So we actually have a team of 12 block printers that work for us and a lovely studio in Delhi that prints for us. So my designs then go out to Delhi. And we work with, again, they are master crafts people. When you watch these blocks being carved, it's extraordinary. And they, what I love about it is they slightly sort of put their touch or their angle onto my design. So I have to stay quite open-minded now because it's not me carving it, it's somebody else. And again, that's something I've really learned to appreciate. I love that it's got someone else's mark as well within it. But they carve the blocks and then we play with colours at the print table and we play with the base cloth. And away we go. And we are printing about 300 meters of cloth a day now, which is about, you know, just over 2,000 a week. So it's a huge amount of cloth, and I'm doing it all by hand. And I've been told many times, why not have it printed on a machine? You know, we could churn that out easily, what we do in a month, probably in a day. But the, as you said earlier, there's something about the quality of it. There's something about the human touch. I mean, a piece of cloth actually really is a piece of art. You know, it's got an energy to it and a movement to it that I just don't think you necessarily get in other cloths. And that's why I just love it. So I love the imperfections you get from a human hand placing it, and picking it up, and it being slightly off here or there. And for me, that makes it much more attractive than if it was absolutely perfect, if it was completely generic. So I think that block printed cloth's got a wonderful energy and a life to it, and I just love seeing it all coming into fruition. And then the final element is people using it in their houses and seeing it as someone's loved curtains or on a chair or as a cushion.
Well, absolutely. And I'm sitting in my bedroom actually, because the house is so busy at the moment, and I have in my windows, I have a Molly Mahn from I think probably 15 years ago. Yeah, it was quite early days, I remember.
You've definitely got one of my original designs. That's so nice.
Yeah, I love it. So tell us about your new collection before we perhaps move on to talking a little bit about gardening. So what is the new collection that you're just launching?
Well, the new collection leads on rather nicely to garden. It's called Bloom. And it was originally about this celebration. Well, originally I thought it would just be about a dahlia print. I think we're going to talk about it in a bit. I've got this complete obsession with dahlias. I mean, who hasn't at the moment? And so I really wanted to celebrate that on cloth and bring it into my house. So I started with this dahlia design, and then actually the collection grew, and it's got another big floral print in it. And then you always need, I always find with interiors that if you're using a floral, it really works to have a sort of stripe or something more geometric sitting alongside it. And so I've got a few other designs that sit alongside those, and the whole collection's called Bloom. I continue to use my very bold and bright colour palette that I find joy-inducing, I think is the word, but I love bright and bold colours. You see them in the garden. I want to bring them into my house. They cheer me up no end during the sort of winter months. And so, yes, it's a new collection printed on cottons and linens. And I think some of them have got more colours than I've ever used before. So that's been exciting to incorporate more and more colour. As I've grown as a block printer, I think and my confidence has grown. It kind of shines through in the cloth. So they've got slightly more kind of complicated as we go.
Yes, I bet that's true. Yeah, you can sort of layer things in a more confident way. I definitely find that the longer I garden, the more I'm prepared to experiment, I suppose, and more confident. Funnily enough, we had a florist here demonstrating the other day called Shane Connolly. I don't know if you know him. He's the sort of sustainable florist. And I sat back, and it was just such a pleasure watching him because of his confidence, because he's been doing it for 30 years. And I see a lot of people doing demonstrations, and I love all of them. But there was something so restful, actually, about watching somebody who was so at ease with their craft and so confident. And I'm sure that's true with you, is you've done it such a long time now that you're not too eager to please. Maybe it's something to do with that.
I think it's keeping I think what's interesting about me as well, maybe, is that because I haven't come from the sort of art education, and I'm not an interior designer, I suppose I don't belong particularly anywhere. But equally, I also find that it gives me a freedom in a way to just stay true to myself. And I think that's what I've always done, is I've created for, you know, things. Originally, it was for things in my own house, and it's grown from there. So I'd only do a wallpaper that I'd want to put in one of our rooms, for example. It's very personal. It's been a very personal journey. And as our brand has grown beyond anything I could have imagined, actually, you know, it's still got my name on it, and it's still very much, it's terribly personal. It comes from my heart and soul and my experiences along the way, actually. I was involved in there was an exhibition of Constance Spry vases at the Garden Museum. And that's where I met Shane, actually. And so I've also included a fabric that's lots of different vases or block printed vases as well, which is just really sweet. And, you know, you need a vessel for your flowers. So I thought it was quite fitting to kind of include that as a pattern.
Fantastic. And so when does it go live? I mean, like imminently?
So it's just gone. So we've just launched it. We're sort of doing it at the moment. We're launching it and it's getting out there and we're getting lots of orders for samples and things. So it's very exciting. So it's heading out into the world as we speak and we launch it in America in October.
Gosh, how amazing. So tell us a little bit about, so the dahlia has been really important to you, but any other plants? I know nature, like the blackbird is one that I know really well. And actually we have in our cottage in Scotland. But tell us about nature and gardening, particularly being an inspiration to you over the years.
Well, yes, it's such a great place to start with pattern designing, picking a leaf and using it to create something. And it's like, why do we always look towards nature? There's something just so calming and the reverence of nature. It's so powerful at the same time, isn't it? And I think that for years and years and years, we've all looked to celebrate that some way. I'm really influenced by the Mughal artists, particularly the miniature painters who, you know, absolutely studied flowers in a very botanical way and painted them so beautifully in amazing colours. And again, when you go to India, you see floral patterns everywhere and often alongside a chevron or a stripe. Like I said, they sort of balance each other. A chevron in India is sort of symbolic of the water, which is just so effective. But there are flowers everywhere, all over the bridges, all over. They paint the cars, the lorries. Everything is sort of celebrating nature in all her beauty and her power. And I think for me, it's the most wholesome place you could be in nature or outside, especially during tricky or challenging times. I was very unwell about 7 years ago, and I just can't imagine life without the great outdoors. And I think that's what I'm just sort of celebrating when I'm doing my patterns. It's a sort of gratefulness in a way and wanting to bring it into my home. But yes, I live in the Ashdown Forest, so I can walk out, I'm very spoilt, and find lovely ferns and all sorts of interesting leaves and little flowers. And when my children were smaller, they really made me look much closer at these things, and we'd take our time and I'd bring them back into the studio and create my patterns from there. And now I look sort of further afield to India as well and the marigold fields that you come across out there. And it's all these sort of natural inspirations as well. We both live very near Charleston. And the Bloomsbury Group, they were brilliant at painting vases of flowers everywhere and bringing their garden inside to their home. It sort of connects it all somehow.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So before we finish, I just wondered if you would tell us what your favourite plant is. But I sort of feel you already have, perhaps, which is the dahlia.
Yes, I think I've got two. So at the moment, I've got they're from you, hundreds of tulips working their way out of the ground and into the sunshine, which is very exciting. Some have flowered, some are still to come. I love at this time of year, I love seeing the tulips poking their heads out of the ground and then coming into bloom. And I pull them out and stick them in vases and take them inside. So tulips, definitely a favourite. But then it's these dahlias. I've only really sort of come aware of them for the last sort of 3 years or something. And again, I've planted your amazing Rajasthan dahlia mix.
Oh, yes.
And the colours, you know, they're so rich and vibrant, aren't they? And then these great big blousy blooms. I'm always amazed that I'm not a gardener, that I can actually grow these things. I feel very proud when I pluck one and stick it in a vase.
It must be acid, sandy soil, is it, with you?
I think so, because I know I get away with just popping them in the ground and they seem to grow. So it's definitely not me. It's definitely the soil. But a great big bed of dahlias. I mean, there's nothing that can make one more happy.
Yeah, I know. It's a good choice, I'd say. And so I just wanted to tell everyone that Molly's coming to do a course with us here. And as she's just pointed out, it's the 21st of June, which is summer solstice. So it couldn't be a more appropriate thing. And tell us a little bit. So it's a workshop where you're going to teach. So you're going to explain everything about your history and all, but also then teach people how to get going on the whole block printing fanaticism.
Yeah, it's a real highlight in my diary, Sarah. So we get to spend all day at Purchill and we'll meet. And you're right, as I say, I'll talk about, hopefully you'll talk as well about your gardens, and I'll talk about my work. And I think they're going to have a lovely tour of your garden. And then we're going to be inspired and full of energy. And I'm going to teach the basics of block printing. And the aim of the day is to print a lovely frilly edged cushion that people will take away, and it will be an heirloom piece they'll have in their houses forevermore, and it will remind them of that day. But actually, they're also going to, we don't always do this, but they're going to take away the wooden blocks that they're going to print with, and they're going to take away their pots of paints and in a lovely box of block printing delight. so that they can hopefully get the bug and carry on printing at home. It's something you can really do at your kitchen table. But I know it's really nice to start out on a course where you can ask all the questions. I can really show you how to apply the paint properly and all the sort of technical side to it. And actually, it'll be a lovely coming together of people, a nice group of people. And I find creatively, that's always super fun when we can kind of share ideas and talk things through all together.
Absolutely. Well, and I hope, I'm going to be there doing it. I really hope. I love it. I love it. I've only done a little bit. I've done two workshops, but I'm longing for it. And I hope you'll find some things in the garden here that will inspire you so we can have mutual inspiration. So, yeah, well, it was so nice to chat to you, Molly, and really good luck with the new collection.
Thank you.
See you in June.
See you in June. I can't wait. Brilliant. Thanks, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to Grow Cookie to Range. Next week, I'm joined by an old friend and colleague, Tricia Guild from Designers Guild, who has that wonderful interior shop, a design studio, really, that does everything from beautiful, beautiful fabrics to ceramics, and a huge inspiration drawn from the garden. So I look forward to chatting to Tricia and you all listening to that next week. You can find more information, photos, and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes we talk about on this podcast by heading to the show notes or at sarahraven.com/podcast.